Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got Adam Vingan coming up later this hour at 9:30. Looking forward to his thoughts, and including a spicy take from Greg Wyshynski from ESPN on the Predators offseason as well. So we'll get to that more coming up a little bit later this hour. Right now, talking Titans. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Rex Road, things got a little spicy on the Twitter sphere last night between Paul Kaharsky, of course, PaulKaharsky.com and Outkick360, and A.J. Brown, Tennessee Titans receiver. Now, if you missed it yesterday, Paul tweeted out a video from Titans training camp of Josh Reynolds running some routes. Says, quote, Josh Reynolds does not look explosive to me, which Paul's not the only one that's talked about that. I mean, Steve Lehman just talked about it on the show. You've mentioned it as well. Many guys out there have mentioned watching Josh Reynolds, and he's just come back from injury. Doesn't look like the same Josh Reynolds out there to this point. A.J. Brown taking exception to that tweet from Kaharsky, saying, quote, I'm going to say this as nice as I can. Nobody asked for your expletive opinion.
Bleeping.
He's opinion. Probably working through something like everyone else is in camp. I'll probably get in trouble for this, but I don't even care. Need to learn some respect fast. This coming from A.J. Brown to Paul Kaharsky.
Now, spicy, baby.
As you can imagine.
What we need to go. Let's go. Let's go, Nashville. Let's go.
That generated a lot of buzz on the Twitter sphere last night. A.J. Brown has since deleted the tweet, which, you know, in today's day and age, after you've tweeted out, if you're A.J. Brown, I mean, it's already been screenshot 1,000 times, so there's really no point in deleting the tweet anymore. But he has. The tweet no longer exists on A.J. Brown's page.
Does that mean he retracts the statement?
I don't know. Probably not. I imagine that
regrets
means somebody.
The statement?
Imagine it probably means somebody from the Titans called A.J. Brown and was like, hey, why don't you take that down?
Well, they should have realized that deleting the tweet does nothing. So they should not have advised him that if that's what they did.
That's just my guess. I don't know if that's what happened, but that's my guess.
If he believes what he said, stick with it. He's backing up a teammate.
He was backing up a teammate. And this is one of those things where as soon as this happened, I started looking through some of the replies. And, of course, there were a whole lot of, get him, AJ, and what you drag him, AJ. Because that's what happens when an athlete does anything. They can say anything they want. And
to a media member.
The fanboys just start dragging. And I get that. That's fine.
You're having quite a week going off on the fanboys.
Well, it's one of the banes of my existence where you just follow something to a fault. But that's fine. Hey, fandom is not a bad thing. Extreme fandom sometimes can be a little much. But it's fine.
See, I think they're both right.
I agree.
I think they're both right here. There's nothing wrong with what Paul tweeted. I will say, like, I saw Paul's tweet at some point yesterday, and I was just like, yeah, okay, I guess. I mean, to me, I agree. He doesn't look explosive in that one clip. And in general, it's clear. It almost seems to me like Reynolds has two injuries, one upper, one lower, that he's been working through. So, okay, what were you going to say?
Well, it makes sense for him to not really look all that great right now. He's been back from injury from the last couple of days. So they're both right. But A.J. Brown's saying, you know, he's probably working through something at this point, which I think we know that he is.
Right. Now I think A.J., I mean, when I say they're both right, I say A.J.'s right to, you know, to have the impulse to back up his teammate,
sure,
not be afraid to say what he thinks. Hey, it's a free website. You can get on there and say what you think, and I appreciate that. Now, I think A.J. is probably reading into Paul's post as, like, some big, you know, like, again, if he's like, wow, Josh Reynolds looks like a real jerk out there, you know, then that's one thing. I mean, it's just an observation on a guy running around. These are pro athletes, get paid a lot of money. Fans want to know if they look good or bad in camp. Those of us who are on the sidelines daily say this guy did this well, this guy did this not well, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I think AJ is probably reading into it too much, but hey. I mean, I'm here for it.
You're here for the Twitter beef.
Yeah. But to your point, the annoying part is then, yes, some of the responses that are like, yeah, Kaharsky, we'll get him out of there. Yeah. Like, take his press credentials. Like, okay. you don't want someone who's objectively looking at the team and whether, you know, whether you agree with their analysis or not, giving you honest analysis?
No, the answer to that a lot of times is no, they don't want that. That's what I've discovered. Yeah. No, they don't.
That's fine. I mean, you can go a number of different ways. Personally, teams I've followed my entire life, I don't want people who are going to spin things for the team because, you know, I want the most unvarnished truth possible. As a follower of any sports team,
I would agree.
I think that's what most people want. Am I wrong?
I hope you're not wrong.
Remember that the vocal on Twitter often don't represent a much larger group of people who just don't feel compelled to scream on Twitter.
That's a good life motto to remember. Twitter is not real life. It's a good thing to keep in mind. That's I might get that tattooed on my shoulder. Twitter is not real life.
That'd be cool. We'd do that instead of the pedicures. See if Heidi will come out.
Welcome, Heidi. Would you like to go get a tattoo with us? See if we can get that worked out. But look, I mean, this is not the world's biggest deal. I'm sure that A.J. Brown will again at some point speak with Paul Kaharsky. I would imagine that something gets addressed. Now, I don't think I've seen Kaharsky react on Twitter yet, which is...
No, I just went to his feed, so he actually did, it looks like, because I missed this all last night. Like, I woke up to these texts, and I'm like, ooh, this is fun. But it looks like, when you look back at his time, it looks like he, a couple hours later, clarify, like, he's been hurt.
Yeah.
Just fine. I mean, again, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong at all with what he did. Just like there's nothing wrong at all with asking Rashad Weaver obvious questions about his legal case. But I think A.J. Brown is becoming a very outspoken member of this team.
He is. Which, look, again, we're here for.
Yeah. Even last year, A.J. Brown, and of course last year you're talking all Zoom, all separated. Even last year, he got visibly annoyed with some questions. I can remember in particular my colleague Kyle Tucker asking about like that drop against Indy.
Yeah.
And he got ticked. You know, but he's much more comfortable being who he is and voicing and being real. That's great. And so if you're a Titans fan seeing him, whether you could love Kaharsky and still be like, yes, AJ, like get after it, you know, support your teammate. A little bit misguided. I think again he read too much into what Kaharsky posted, but yeah, well, I'm all for real interactions. This is where Twitter, before we had Twitter, how does that happen? It only happens, you know, if you have an interview setting where he responds. And probably by then, a cooler heads prevail, and we never get the tweet.
Exactly.
We never get the actual feeling on what it is. I just wish you didn't delete it.
I know. Just put it back up.
Stand by it.
I mean, it's all over the place on Twitter right now where people have screenshot it. So, look, just stick with your guns, AJ. I'm sure somebody called it. Like, hey, you take that down, please.
But again, I'm going to ask today over there because if that's the case, like you understand, like deleting a tweet does nothing to erase it from the world.
Not from a guy like A.J. Brown. Like if, you know, your average person tweeted something, they could delete it and most people would have no idea.
Well,
but
sure,
A.J. Brown, immediately when he tweets something, it's going to be run with.
Yeah, I mean, thousands of people immediately react to that, right? I'm sure, or at least saw it. So deleting it to me is like is saying that you're retracting it. And maybe he is, but again, maybe the F-bomb in there. But hey, I mean, I threw about 8 F-bombs at Kaharsky loudly on the sideline yesterday. I was trying to out F-bomb Vrabel. Didn't quite get it done, but you know, sometimes you just got to do this with Paul. This is what I miss about open locker room because every once in a while, you know, like, you know, Wesley Woodyard all of a sudden is screaming at Kaharsky. I actually missed that day. You know, I miss the actual in-your-face stuff that we used to get.
Well, hopefully we're getting closer and closer to that coming back. We'll see what A.J. Brown – maybe we'll see, number one, whether or not A.J. Brown's on the field today at Titans training camp, and we'll see how things go on Twitter. A.J. Brown's become a very interesting follow on social media. Between this the Instagram Live – the Julio Jones recruitment videos?
He needs his own show.
He really does.
Are you guys okay if I leave right now? Because I want to walk in with Kaharsky as he walks by A.J. Brown while riding on the exercise bike.
Yes.
That's what happens today?
Yes.
Oh, man. Poor, it's like, no.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans when we come back. Got some of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We got some tickets to give away to the Yacht Rock Review concert coming up at Marathon Music Works this Friday.
Yacht Rock.
Yacht Rock. Coming up this Friday at Marathon Music Works. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to attend the Yacht Rock Review at Marathon Music Works coming up this Friday. So hit up those phone lines right now. 615-737-1025. Going to be interesting today at training camp. Day two of the officials for the Titans at training camp today as well. And then the real thing coming up on Friday for a preseason game. So game week for the Tennessee Titans. How did the officials do yesterday? Were there a lot of flags being, a lot of laundry being thrown around there yesterday? That's typically how these go on the first day of officials.
Not enough.
At training camp.
Not enough. They were trash. They missed a bunch of PIs. I mean, really? They really did. They weren't very good.
It's not good. It's not what you want.
No. At least that's what I thought. Maybe I'm too
too harsh on the officials.
Maybe I'm too offense geared, but I feel like there was some handsy defense being played out there yesterday. But it's good to have them because you get some of the false starts and stuff that you get a little bit more consequence, which of course you'll have Friday too, which Vrabel talked about yesterday. You actually get to see what happens when you're not focused and you're you hurt your team with a silly penalty. So there's some value in it.
Absolutely.
This will be the last day that I leave early this week because tomorrow they have the night practice at Nissan Stadium.
Correct.
Thursday there is a travel day. And then
Friday there's a game.
Friday they play in Atlanta. So this is the last morning practice of the week, which is interesting. The next week they go to Florida.
Yeah. A little bit of – that's the other thing. Like – practice with Tom Brady, you're automatically just going to get better by association. So the Titans could have a lot of improvement next week.
Right. They could all be immortal coming home.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ben texting in, maybe Ryan Tannehill can graduate and move past being, quote, training wheels Tanny this year. Been a lot of hatred towards Ryan Tannehill.
Training wheels Tannehill, huh?
Do you feel like Ryan Tannehill has been operating with training wheels on in this offense? Warren, because if that's the case, what was Marcus Mariota doing in this offense would be my question.
Yeah, I mean, he was in a bouncy chair. I
guess
don't know.
So.
Warren Sharp was one of those football data guys.
Yep.
Works for NBC. I think that's pretty new. He had an interesting piece out, I think it's today possibly, about Tannehill and the Titans. Tannehill, since he's taken over, 0.99 points per minute with this offense. Patrick Mahomes, 0.77 in the same time period.
Yeah.
When Mariota was the QB pre-Tannehill, it was 0.43. It's the best in the league per minute. So, again, you're not talking per game. You're talking per minute of possession.
Right.
Tannehill's offense, the Tannehill-led offense leads the NFL. In that, I mean, yeah, you can go through stat after stat, and you think that's training wheels Tannehill, then I invite you to watch more football and maybe pay attention.
Well, and we've talked about it many times. There's going to be a narrative around him, I think, until the playoffs come around. I think Tannehill,
and that's totally
could have,
fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Well, it is, but I think Tannehill could have a phenomenal year this year in the regular season. And if they're one and done in the playoffs again, the same conversation is going to take place next year. I mean, it's not going to be any different, regardless of how good he is in the regular season. It's just the way I view it.
No question. Look, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, but let's also keep in mind, like Aaron Rodgers, your guy, is going to go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. He's been able to win one title. It is not easy to get there, but he's had great playoff performances.
Sure.
And Tannehill probably needs not just to make winning plays as a quarterback, but needs to – the box score's got to look better for him. Some people got to have that box score because they're not watching closely. So he probably needs to have that 280-yard, three-touchdown win And then I think maybe some people will then buy in. But I think some people are going to.
Just a lost cause.
Yeah. They just don't buy it.
Which I just don't understand.
I don't understand a Titans fan who watches this team weekly who doesn't feel good about the quarterback.
This is.
I understand people around the league who don't watch. They don't watch the Titans.
This is probably going to upset some people, but I don't care. This is the best quarterback play the Titans have ever had. The best. And I am including Steve McNair in that conversation. The last 2 years from Ryan Tannehill, there has not ever been a Titans quarterback that's played better. Now, McNair was different, and they played the game differently. There has never been a Titans quarterback that's played better than Ryan Tannehill has the last couple of years. I fully believe that.
I mean, I'm not arguing with you. I think there's a lot of intangibles that go into the position, too.
I agree.
And that's where it's like...
McNair's off the charts in that stuff.
Yeah, so... And look, McNair... Got him to the Super Bowl. McNair got him within a yard of overtime in the Super Bowl, possibly winning the Super Bowl. So those things, until Tannehill gets there, there's a lot of people who are going to disagree with you. But as far as the play after play, I mean, again, he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league the last couple of years. And when he took over in 19, he and Joe Montana have the best completion percentage, yards per attempt ever in the history of the NFL. Montana 89, Tannehill that year. I know you can find stats to, you know, to spin, however, but there's no spin with that one. I mean, he
just
was that good.
Yeah.
So, and of course he benefits from Derrick Henry. Find me the great quarterback we think about in the NFL who had crap around him. And don't tell me Tom Brady, because Tom Brady's had great players around him too.
He's had a few.
He hasn't had the receiver.
He did have Randy Moss.
Arsenal, right. Yeah, and that was the best he ever played.
Yeah.
And he has a heck of an arsenal now.
He'll play again. He'll play that level again this year.
Probably.
At age 44.
Probably. 17-0.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, we brought up the FPI earlier. FPI, Football Power Index at ESPN, a big believer in the Tampa Bay Bucs this year. Big time. Which, hey, they've brought back every single starter they have and, like, I think go 31 deep in terms of their most snaps played last year, people they brought back. It's pretty incredible what they've been able to do.
Yep.
Apparently, if you win the Super Bowl in the modern-day NFL era, salary cap just no longer exists.
It is. It's pretty amazing, right?
Chiefs did it last year. Now the Bucs doing it again this year. It's pretty incredible. So if the Titans can win this year, maybe don't have to worry about the salary cap.
God dang it.
That's two mutes.
No, come on.
You muted yourself twice on the same one. How's it not two?
I just tried to talk twice. Okay. I said, so, okay. One mute. That's right. One mute. Ben is just trying to mess with me all day in the text line. He said, Dan Fouts was underwhelming. But, yes, he says he was referring to the playoffs on Tannehill. Sad it's still not good enough, though. Well, Ben, we don't know that. I mean, again, Aaron Rodgers has won one Super Bowl. So how many has he been to?
One.
One Super Bowl. I mean, you can be
– five conference championships.
You can be – yeah, you can be great, and that's still – tough, you know, to get there. I just don't know how anybody could watch Tannehill play the last couple of years and not think that he could do it. I'm not saying he will,
right?
But it's not some long shot. And if they get there, this is not Brad Johnson, Rex Grossman stuff. Okay,
no, it is not.
It's not what he is.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kathleen texting in. I just want to know when you guys will stop criticizing Mariota. Yeah, Joe, when are you going to stop doing that?
Wait a minute, Kathleen. Now, I'm not saying I'm a Mariota, you know, fanboy here, but I definitely, I think, balance Robbie out a little bit on that.
Marcus Mariota is a great person.
Sure. I mean, look, he's not a great quarterback. We can both agree on that.
Yeah.
So if that's being critical of him, then I don't – again – If Paul Kaharsky says, hey, he doesn't look explosive in this clip, like is he being overly critical of him?
I don't think so.
Is saying that Marcus Mariota is a backup quarterback and right now we're trying to figure out if he could be a starter in the league again?
I mean, the rest of the NFL apparently agrees.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's a reasonable conversation, right? Everybody liked him personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say I've probably been a little bit more critical about his play on the field than you have. Maybe I take it a little bit too far sometimes. But I received a lot of crap for my Marcus Mariota takes back in the day. I kept receipts.
Well, hey, I mean, you ended up being right. I mean, it was a big debate. You were clearly on one side of it. I changed from 16. I was like, yeah, he's on his way. Then you get to 18. And so if you were like totally down on him all that time, okay, good for you.
First one.
I think information changed.
It did.
I think he took a big downturn, but some people, you know, felt that way. So, hey, maybe Tannehill is about to, you know, regress.
Maybe.
Significantly this year. And if that's the case, well, then that's fine. And there's going to be people who say, well, I knew all along. I was right. But I'm going to say, well, you still didn't properly process the information of what you saw from him in 2019 right. and 2020. I mean, what he did is what he did.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, do you think the Titans draft a quarterback in the next year or two to keep Logan Woodside, or do they keep Logan Woodside as the starter for when Tannehill's gone?
Well, I don't think Logan Woodside is the intended heir apparent.
Well, it's also Ryan Tannehill is not 45 years old.
Right.
Ryan Tannehill, if he plays at a high level again this year, what reason is there to even consider moving on from Ryan Tannehill in the next 2 to 3 years?
No, I mean, my guess is that there's another deal for Tannehill in Tennessee. And also, by the way, let's keep looking at his deal as time goes on.
It looks very good.
I mean, Logan Woodside is a great story. The fact that he has stuck in this league is a great story.
Sure.
Good for him. Good on him. He has worked his butt off. It's been an incredible improvement. I was talking with Caroline Fenton yesterday. I'm like, I remember him when he first arrived here in 2018. I didn't know what he was doing in camp. And look at him now. Tremendous. He's not the intended starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans after Ryan Tannehill. Everybody has a ceiling.
They keep bringing people in to try to take the backup job away from him.
Oh, yeah.
And he keeps holding him off.
Absolutely. But, I mean, if you want to watch him Friday night when he'll get a lot of work, you'll see, like, the difference between him and, say, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
I mean, the next starting quarterback is somebody whose name we don't know right now, but to your point, I think it could be a while.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Nashville Predators. Came out with a piece yesterday projecting what the Predators lineup could look like. We'll get into that with Adam. Also get his thoughts on UC Soros and arbitration as well. Should Predators fans be worried? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road has taken off to go to Titans training camp. So looking forward to updates from Joe Rex Road tomorrow morning starting at 6 a.m. here on the show. And with that in mind, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Rex Road ditched me?
He did. It's really disrespectful when it gets down to it.
I'm sure he's in the car right now driving to St. Thomas Sports Park and listening, so I just want Joe to know that he's a big old jerk.
I'm sure he appreciates that.
While you're driving, Joe. Hey, Joe, you're a big jerk.
That's right. And Adam, I know you enjoyed the conversation earlier we were having about teams and sports that you just hate. I got to tell you, your Duke Blue Devils have popped up a whole lot here on this text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Well, I was thinking, and I was hoping to talk to Joe about this, and I guess we can talk about it another time. You know, he mentioned Grayson Allen, Christian Laettner, and J.J. Redick, as well as Mike Krzyzewski. You know, sign me up for that team. I would buy the T-shirt, the jersey, the whole outfit.
Sure you would.
I was trying to think of two other players to round out that team, but it was hard because those are clearly, in my opinion, the three most hated Duke Blue Devils in program history.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are other players that are hated. You know, like, I'm sure if you were to ask, you know, a fan of the University of Maryland, 20 years ago, they probably would have said Shane Battier, but it's hard to hate Shane Battier.
Oh, he's a great guy.
You know, he's a great guy. I mean, great defensive player. You know, I can understand you hating him because he was good. You know, J.J. and Grayson and Christian Laettner, you know, they have faces only mothers could love, and I understand that. But, yeah, sign me up. I'm all for that team.
I'm sure you are. Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All right, Adam, so Soros and the arbitration that could be coming their way if the Predators and UC Soros are not able to reach an agreement before then. If it gets down to it, And arbitration is the route that it goes between UC Soros and the Predators, and it ends up being a one-year deal. How concerned would you be if you're a Predators fan about Soros and his long-term future here with the team?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that because UC Soros was the party that requested arbitration, the Predators have the choice of it being a 1 or 2 year award.
Yep.
So most likely, if it goes to arbitration, the Predators will elect a 2 year award to buy out a year of unrestricted free agency.
Right.
But I think in general, the Predators should do their best to avoid this from happening. Most times it doesn't happen. You know, I think if you were to go through the history of arbitration hearings in recent years, and I've done this in the past, more often than not, the team and the player agree to a contract before the hearing date, which basically functions as a deadline. But the Predators do have recent history of players actually going through arbitration. Rocco Grimaldi went through arbitration 2 years ago. Victor Arvidsson went through arbitration 4 years ago. In terms of actually going through with the hearing.
Well, it's not a pleasant experience, right? I mean, you're basically at that point.
No, it's not.
The team is basically standing in front of a judge telling him why all the reasons why they shouldn't pay you all that much and pointing out flaws in your game. It's usually not a very pleasant experience between the player and the team.
No, and think back even further. The year before Shea Weber signed the offer sheet with the Philadelphia Flyers, he went to arbitration with the Predators. It was a contentious hearing, to say the least. And the award was a 1 year, $7.5 million contract. And I wouldn't be surprised if that led to Shea ultimately signing that offer sheet. And one thing also to keep in mind is that the agent who represented Shea Weber in that hearing also represents UC Soros.
Yep.
So they have experience going through this, not something I think they want to do, but they have a week. One thing also that's new in this arbitration cycle, which was changed with the new CBA. Previously, if a player and a team went through the hearing, if I recall correctly, the arbitrator, the neutral party, has 48 hours from the time of the hearing to render a verdict.
Right.
But before, teams and players could continue to negotiate within that 48-hour window. And as long as they got the contract done before the verdict came in, they were okay. That's what happened with Victor Arvidsson. They went through the hearing, but in that 48-hour window, they agreed to a 7-year contract. That no longer exists under the new CBA. So if it gets to arbitration, like if the Predators and UC Soros can't agree to a new contract by, I would assume, the morning of August 18th, a week from tomorrow, then whatever the arbitrator decides is what the contract is. There is no more negotiating after that. So that's something also to keep in mind, is that there isn't a grace period after the hearing anymore where teams can continue to negotiate. Once the hearing starts, what the judge says goes.
Adam, what did you think of the contract for Dante Fabbro? Gets locked into a 2-year deal worth $4.8 million. Is that about where you thought it would land? What do you think of that contract from both the Predators' point of view and from Fabbro's as well?
You know what? I thought it was a fine contract. The Evolving Hockey website, which does a really great job of contract projections based on recent history, they had a 2-year deal for Fabbro at around $2.3 million. So they were very close. It makes a lot of sense, I think, for both sides. Dante Fabbro, it's a bridge deal. It's a prove-it contract.
Yep.
He gets a significant raise from his entry-level deal. We know what happened at the end of last season. He did not play in the playoffs. It was a big topic of conversation. The Predators, professed their confidence in Dante, and I think this shows it, that they feel like he can prove what he could be, what he should be in these next couple of years. It gives him the incentive that it's a short-term contract to prove it, so that when his contract comes up again in 2 years, he can sign a longer-term deal with more money. I had no problem with the contract. I think the initial reaction from some Predators fans was that it was a bit rich for a player who didn't even play in the playoffs, but you know, I personally believe that that whole thing was overblown in terms of Dante not playing in the playoffs. Would I have played him in the playoffs? Yeah, but I think, you know, the idea that he was going to be disgruntled and that the team was burning bridges with Dante Fabro by scratching him in the playoffs, I thought that whole storyline was overblown. So I think it was a good contract. I think it's good for both sides.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Adam, you came out with a very interesting piece yesterday at TheAthletic.com, just projecting ahead what the Predators roster could look like for opening night, both what it could look like and, in your opinion, what it should look like. And people can check that out, as I said, at TheAthletic.com. You can find it at Adam Vingan on Twitter. What were some of the things that you kind of learned putting together this roster projection, and how much different do you think the Predators lineup could look like when it comes to opening night this year with the combination of young players that they have and some additions via trade that they brought in as well?
Yeah, they're going to look a lot different. No more Victor Arvidsson, no more Ryan Ellis, no more Pecorine, no more Cali Yarncroke, just to name a few. You know, in steps Cody Glass, Philip Myers. You know, you could see some of the younger players, you know, take a step in. Maybe someone like Philip Tomasino, for example, or Rem Pitlick, who was a restricted free agent who accepted his qualifying offer. He was eligible for arbitration but did not request an arbitration case. I put together two versions of the lineup. One I think they could use just based on recent history, and one that I think they should use. And my should lineup featured 11 skaters, 24 or younger,
yep,
out of 18. Because I felt that at this point, you know, I think the Predators should use this season as what I called a transition year. To me, making the playoffs this season should be secondary. That isn't to say that they should give up on trying to make the playoffs, but I think the goal should not be making the playoffs. The primary goal should be evaluating the up-and-comers in this organization and determining who of those young players should be a part of this team's future moving forward. So that's why I put Cody Glass as a second-line center. That's why I put Ellie Tolvanen in on the first-line right wing and Philip Tomasino on the second-line right wing. That's why I put either Jeremy Davies or Davis Barron in the third left-handed defenseman spot instead of Ben Harper. You know, that's why I put Rem Pitlick on the third line. You know, I think you need to put the players, these young players, in their best positions and let them make mistakes and let them learn the hard way. You know, I think what we saw last year was a hesitance, I think, on the part of management to really buy into that youth movement, which we saw in free agency last year when they, you know, they signed Matt Benning, they signed Mark Borowiecki, they signed Brad Richardson, Eric Halla, they re-signed Mikael Granlund. We didn't see that this year. You know, they re-signed Mikael Granlund, and they signed David Rittich to back up UC Saros, but, you know, Cody Glass is 22, Philip Myers is 24. You know, I think they're more committed to giving those younger players a chance this year than they were last year, and I think they should go all in on it. Because when you look at the Central Division, to me, this team is no better than a borderline playoff team. They're not better than Colorado. They're not better than Minnesota. They're probably not better than Winnipeg or Chicago. You know, maybe they're on par with St. Louis. Who knows? But I think the only team in the division, unless I'm forgetting someone, Robbie, I think the only team in the division that they're clearly better than is Arizona.
Agreed.
I do not believe they and Arizona is tanking big time. So it's not like they had to clear a high bar to be better than the Coyotes. So to me, this team is a borderline fourth place, fifth place team at best. So don't do anything that will jeopardize building this team for the future by trying to work your way into a wild card spot and losing the first round again. So go all in. And if the kids are in a playoff spot, great. If they don't, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check out his work at TheAthletic.com. Adam, great stuff. Appreciate you taking time to join us, even at Rex Road's disrespect to you. And I wish you good luck this year in football season as well. Hopefully the Saints don't trade away Michael Thomas.
Yeah, it's not looking so good for the Saints right now.
It's not.
Speaking of tanking, I wouldn't be opposed to that. So they only have to go with 1 year of Jameis Winston as quarterback.
Probably the best case scenario in that point. Adam, appreciate you, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Adam Vigan from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rexard. We'll come back, react to what Adam had to say, and get to some offseason grades for NHL teams that Greg Wyshynski of ESPN has thrown out there, and he is not very high on the Nashville Predators. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrod here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Sunday as Nashville SC takes on DC United at Nissan Stadium. Pregame starts at 5:45, and the match begins at 6 p.m. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrod here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day, taking your thoughts on our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tim from Lewisburg texting in. I think Joe Rexrod owes Adam Vigan a gift card of his choosing since he bailed on him today. Tim, I think you might be right. I know Darren McFarland and company, they've had a lot of fun with the gift cards at Adam Vigan's expense. And it's been fun to watch Vigan be disappointed over and over again. I'm not going to lie. But I do think since Rexrod bailed today, maybe a gift card could be owed to Adam Vigan in this situation. We'll see if Rexrod's willing to follow through on that front. We appreciate Adam for joining us in the last segment. And we brought up Saros, his arbitration case, Dante Fabro, and his new contract with the Predators as well, 2 years, $4.8 million. And I was kind of scurrying around yesterday on ESPN and came across some off-season grades that Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, who does a great job covering the NHL for them, came out with some off-season grades for each team in the National Hockey League. And you fast forward down to the Nashville Predators section, a grade of a D for the Nashville Predators. Obviously, the additions, backup goaltender David Rittich, Philip Myers, and Cody Glass, who each came over in the Ryan Ellis trade as well. And then losses, obviously Pekka-Rinne, Ryan Ellis, Victor Arvidsson, Eric Halla, Brad Richardson, Cali Yarncroak, and Eric Gudbranson as well. And the rationale here from Wyshynski, quote, the bounty from the Ellis trade ended up being defenseman Philip Myers, who brings size, and center Cody Glass, whom the Golden Knights clearly felt wasn't going to blossom into a number one center. They shipped him out, they shipped out Arvidsson before they had to leave him exposed in the expansion draft. Rene's retirement means that it's UC Saros' crease with Rittich as his cost-effective backup. The four-year deal with $5 million in annual average value handed to Granlund was an overpayment. Worst of all, they couldn't entice Seattle to remove either Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene from their cap. This offseason was symptomatic of a team moving in the wrong direction. So Wyshynski, pretty harsh in his words there for the Nashville Predators in their offseason. Symptomatic of a team moving in the wrong direction. And look, quite frankly, I don't think that's going to be an unpopular take as the Predators move forward here. We're a few weeks away now from training camp, getting fired up with the Predators. And the roster is much different. As Adam Vigan pointed out in the last segment, it is much different than it was this time a year ago. And I don't think the Predators are going to be a very high pick to be competitive this year in the Central Division. They're probably going to be right there on the bubble in terms of preseason predictions to make the playoffs. It's an interesting spot to be in. If you missed the article that Adam Vigan put up at theathletic.com, go check it out, because there is a pretty stark difference between the lineup the Predators could use that Vigan has pointed out, but also the one he thinks they should use as well. And there are different schools of thought, and you've brought this up on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Some think the Predators should try to remain competitive, go for a playoff spot, do everything it takes to get there. Others are less concerned about the playoffs, more concerned about developing young players and what the longer-term future could look like. Either way, it's going to be a really interesting balance for John Hines this year. I think regardless of the way you handle it, whether that's, you know, putting your best lineup out there every night and trying to get the veterans back to the playoffs this year, or you're more concerned about the young players, like young players, they're going to have to be a part of this discussion whichever route you take. I mean, there's just a handful of young guys in the organization that are going to have to play big roles. I mean, it's just as simple as that with this Predators team. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that shakes out. But I think either way, young guy is going to play a pretty big role on this group. Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, got a texter that says, if the team's goal is what Vigan said, how they should treat the upcoming season, then their offseason is an A. So going to Wyshynski's grade there, if the team's goal is what Adam Vidgen says, and that is getting younger, that is figuring out what you've got with the young players, then the Predators deserve an A, according to that grade. I don't know that I would go an A. Probably wouldn't go D either. I think it has the potential to be an interesting offseason for the Predators. And if Cody Glass comes in and all of a sudden he figures it out and looks like a guy that can start to live up to that potential being drafted sixth overall like he was in 2017 by the Vegas Golden Knights, well, then all of a sudden you're cooking with gas with this Predators team and you feel a whole lot better about the immediate future than you otherwise would. But it's going to be interesting to see how John Hines, David Poile, and company deploy some of this younger talent that they're going to have at their disposal once training camp gets underway. Some quick Titans news as we wrap up the show here today. A.J. Brown back on the field, and Teron Davenport snapping a picture on Twitter, putting it out there. A.J. Brown has a sleeve on his right leg. Haven't seen that before, but good news is he's back on the field for the Titans today. So A.J. Brown missing two consecutive days of practice, both on Saturday and yesterday as well. A.J. Brown is back on the field for the Titans. It does not look like Julio Jones is back out there at this point. So no Julio still. The Julio watch will continue, but A.J. Brown back on the field for the Titans today. So obviously very good news on that front. Michelle, great show today.
It's been a good one, Robbie. It's been a good show. I'm a little tired now. I think it's time for a mid-afternoon nap.
It could be time for a mid-afternoon nap. And just go home and say this to yourself all day long. We are in the South. Nashville is in the South.
Nashville is not.
It's not in the Midwest. Nashville is in the South. If you can do that for me today, that would be great.
Elijah said, oh, no.
We'll have to fill in Elijah Campbell. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. Elijah Campbell in for a good show today with the guys on Darren Donica Chase. But Nashville, in fact, in the South. Proudly.
You learn something new every day.
You learn something new every day here on the show. We're a very educational program here on Robbie and Rex Show. That does it for us today. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Make sure you stay tuned for Darren Donick and Chase. They're up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.